It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're really excited about this program, so let's get to it. Today, we're going to make a small change to the format. Rather than discussing multiple topics with multiple guests, we're going to discuss a single topic with one guest. The topic is going to be healthcare, and the guest is someone you are very familiar with, Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great.
You know, as we were kind of kicking around this concept and thinking of different formats for the show, this one had actually been running around my mind for a while because I noticed sometimes when we bring in a guest during the first half hour, we seem like we're a little, you know, pressed for time.
Right.
At the end of the first segment.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that we would, you know, take the opportunity to experiment a little bit with this new format and see whether or not that works for us a little bit better.
Let's do that.
All right. So for folks who are not necessarily familiar with your background, take a few minutes, let folks know where'd you grow up, where'd you go to school, and what it is that you have done professionally.
Sure. So I'm a Texan at heart. I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. Moved
Boo.
To, no, stop, stop, no, deep in the heart, and moved to Atlanta, Georgia, my senior year of high school.
Okay.
I stayed in Atlanta and attended Spelman College, where I studied mathematics,
mm-hmm.
and graduated, moved to Boston, was in the internet industry, actually the company that invented the internet, I don't know if you knew this or not, BBN, BBN.com, and it was a wonderful experience, but I froze. And actually decided to come back down south. I attended Duke University's Fuqua School of Business for my MBA.
Okay.
And that was in 2000. And then left for Procter & Gamble, where I learned all about brand management, branding, and whatnot on billion-dollar brands.
It was like learning about branding before branding got cool.
Yeah, no one knew what branding was. And yeah, it was pretty exciting. I decided to take that experience and put my shingle out there, start my own business, and I wanted to help nonprofits better brand themselves to better sustain recessionary periods.
Okay. So I know that's going to be core to the segment that we're going through here in a few minutes, but before we get into that part, take a minute and let people know what you are currently doing professionally in addition to Kennedy for Alabama.
In addition to Kennedy for Alabama, I am the president and CEO of Kennedy Strategic Communication. We are a public affairs and brand strategy firm that helps businesses, government entities, nonprofits, pretty much whomever would like some help with communications, strategy, or branding.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. I really do appreciate it. So let's cycle back in the story. You talked about hanging a shingle and starting your own business. After working for Procter & Gamble on the CoverGirl brand. So to take a moment and just tell us a little bit about that story and how that set the foundation for you becoming a healthcare advocate.
Absolutely. So to start talking about my healthcare advocacy, I have to take you back to when I became interested in healthcare. And it's when healthcare hit me, literally in the head. So I was 18 years old, about a month old, in college, you know, freshman, just on campus, and walking across campus, I had a stroke.
Okay.
Had no idea what I'd had. I'd never been sick really a day in my life. And so what happened is the next day or two, I tried to ignore that I'd had the stroke, even though I couldn't talk.
Okay.
I couldn't feel in half my body. And the people who knew me, my roommate, and a couple of people that I become friendly with, they knew something was wrong, but no one knew what it was.
Okay.
So I ended up going to the hospital about 2 days later. The hospital sent me home. I ended up going back to another hospital, this time Emory University, my beloved Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And they discovered that I'd had a stroke.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of where everything began. I had to have open heart surgery to remove the cause of the stroke, which was a tumor in my heart. And I have a mitral valve now. It's called the St. Jude's mechanical valve. So I speak a lot about that, and I'll tell you about that down the road. But that's kind of where my beginning was. And from there, I moved. I graduated from college, moved to Boston, started working for a great company with great health insurance, and decided I wanted to go back to business school, as I have already told you.
Right.
Went to school, joined Procter & Gamble, had a great experience learning all about brands on Olay and CoverGirl brands, and decided to hang my shingle. And this is where the story begins.
Okay.
So I start my business 2005, heading into 2006, actually just before Christmas. I ended up falling ill, and I had no idea what it was, but I knew it was the worst pain I'd experienced, like in terms of, yeah, I think it was in my life, actually. It's the worst pain I'd ever experienced.
Oh, wow.
And it was just the worst stomach ache. And I was like, what on earth is going on? And I just could not handle it. So after a day, I finally said, look, Mom, take me to the hospital.
Mm.
So we go to the hospital, and I check in. And luckily, I was able to check in because I had gotten my insurance. Because the thing is, I knew health insurance was so important. When I left my corporate job and I moved to Atlanta to start my business, and I began looking for insurance, I found that there was a gap plan, basically a gap insurance for alumni from Duke University, which is where I went. And I was able to sign up for that.
Okay, let me stop you just for a second. So you're at Procter & Gamble originally. And while you were at Procter & Gamble, you had, I'm assuming, Procter & Gamble's employee insurance.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So you leave Procter & Gamble, you hang your shingle, start your own business. And did you have any coverage during the time, or is this what kind of sent you to the market looking for this gap insurance?
No, I did have coverage for a bit. I had a Cobra. And so okay, everyone knows Cobra is going to cost you, right? So Cobra was very, very expensive. And starting my business, I knew that one, Cobra was going to expire after 18 months. And two, I just really couldn't afford to maintain that. And I didn't know.
Cobra's expensive.
Yeah. And I didn't know what else I was going to use, because at the time, this is 2006, there were no individual insurance plans.
Mm-hmm.
You pretty much had to be employed by someone, or I guess self-insured. And gotcha. I was not rich enough to be self-insured, given my background. So I knew I needed insurance.
Okay. So you get this gap plan through the Duke University Alumni
mm-hmm.
Association, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So now you have this and you get sick, and then you end up in the hospital. What ends up happening from there?
Right. So something that should have probably taken a few days ended up taking a week. So I was there the entire Christmas to New Year's week. And, but I was finally able to, doctors were able to handle the situation, and I had a surgery, and I actually was better after that.
Okay.
I got home and I thought everything was good, because thankfully I was very strategic and I was very thoughtful in choosing my insurance, a nice solid insurance that would make sure I was covered. Well, about a month later, maybe not quite a month, I started receiving letters in the mail.
Okay.
And the letters were saying, well, tell us more about this and what exactly happened. So I answered the questions, and I answered the questions over and over again. And next thing I know, I get a message in the mail, a determination letter basically, saying that I was no longer covered because of a pre-existing condition.
Okay. So we know one of the things that came up when they were doing all of the healthcare systems evaluation was the way that companies evaluated pre-existing conditions and used that as a pretense for denying coverage, right?
That's right.
That's one of the things that was out there quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So you end up basically getting this letter that said that the most recent incident that you had was somehow related to a pre-existing condition. That's what they were telling you?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Now, granted, like I said, I'd had a stroke, and the stroke ended up resulting in me having open heart surgery to remove a tumor. But this had nothing to do with the stroke or the heart, anything of that nature. This was all gastrointestinal.
Okay.
And I, you know, when you sit here and think about, you know, the hip bones connected to the, this is where this song comes from. I mean,
exactly.
I'm saying this is exactly what was going on in the insurance industry.
So it's interesting, right? So now you're at this point, they've sent you something saying, hey, the problems you had now were related to some sort of pre-existing condition. And then what was the impact of that?
The impact was I was dropped, and the hospital was looking for $50,000 from me.
Ouch.
Brand new business owner.
Oh my God.
All my dreams It was pretty hard. So I ended up spending the next 2 years trying to convince the insurance company of where they went wrong, while I'm also talking to the hospital, letting them know what I'm telling the insurance company, and looking for someone to help with that. It took 2 years. The insurance company did not budge. The hospital did.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things with the large-scale bureaucratic organizations. A lot of times, they're just trying to wait you out.
Exactly.
Trying to see time, effort, frustration, that, you know, maybe rather than dealing with it, you basically come up with some way to come up with the money. Now, the one thing that really strikes me as odd in this particular situation is a lot of times when you hear these stories, it's with these kind of small, unreputable, unscrupulous organizations. But you said this is actually a healthcare plan that you had gotten through your alumni association.
Precisely. And while the insurance company is not connected to Duke, so let me just be really clear about that. Duke had nothing to do with it. However, the insurance company is its own entity. And they decided that they were not going to cover me, probably because when they decided to create this opportunity for the students, they don't expect a student with a history of mine. So, the fact that I have this history that could result in more significant delays and costs, that's pretty much what ended up happening. So it was a challenge for sure. I'd reached out to Duke. They did what they could, but it just did not move the needle with the insurance company.
I got you. So you've got this $50,000 bill. You're going back and forth between the insurance company and the hospital. So what ended up happening at that point?
Well, I'm going back and forth with them and trying to convince them, look, this my stroke and my heart situation had nothing to do with the gastrointestinal issue that I had. And they, I don't even know how to explain it because I didn't understand it myself. There was no connection, but they refused to budge. So what I ended up doing is reaching out to the hospital and then reaching out to people connected to the hospital who helped make decisions for the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that's where somewhere in the mix there, someone decided to grant me leniency. And they told me that my bills and all of my debt had been absolved.
All right. Well, it's good that ultimately some cooler heads prevailed there. So help me with a segue. So how does this now transition from you being impacted something personally to you getting into the space where you wanted to start doing healthcare advocacy?
Well, I tell you, after I received that letter of denial, and at first it's shock when you get something like that. You're like, oh, clearly they don't understand. There's no possible way they could believe this. But after trying and trying again, not only was I sick and tired, literally, at this point I was fuming. I was absolutely furious. And I felt there was no way that anyone should have to go through that by themselves or otherwise. And luckily I was well enough to fight night. And I can be a pretty passionate fighter when it comes for things that I believe in.
Oh, you know, so.
You know, so I can be extremely passionate with things that I believe in. And that's one of them. How dare you beat up on sick people. That's pretty much what it felt like. And I was not going to let that continue to happen as long as I could do anything about it. And so that's when I decided to fight back.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I want to transition to a little bit is how some of the folks in the healthcare industry started to collect stories from individuals such as yourself. And how it was that y'all collectively were telling stories that were essentially the same.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop up with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
So you said stories that they're going to be sharing with Congress?
Yes, yes. And I was fired up about sharing my story because I just gone through a whole lot of mess with the insurance company, and I knew that we needed to do something about it. So not only did I write my story, I started sharing it, and I had a couple of wonderful opportunities to do so because I also became very active with the American Heart Association.
Okay.
As a survivor, an ambassador, I would teach stroke health and information about strokes and heart and whatnot, but I also would tell my story because that's typically the thing that people remember.
Okay.
And it's the thing that kind of sticks with them. So as I'm teaching, I'm also telling and sharing. And that's very much a way that people share back. And it really does become something, it becomes more of a movement. And this is what happened. I told my story. I wrote the op-ed. It became more of a pull where more and more people wanted to hear the story. And it was exactly what they were looking for to help exemplify why we needed this reform.
You know, and part of what it is that I want to emphasize here that I thought was unique about your story was sometimes when you get into the political talking points, the assumption is that the individual who's having difficulty getting coverage was in some way irresponsible. And that was not the case in your life history. We know everyone's body's going to fail at some point.
Thank you. It just happens
that your first body failure happened at 18 versus somebody whose body failure happened later in life, but it's not like you had done anything wrong. And there has to be some solution, either private sector or public sector, that allows you to address that particular thing. So, okay, so you'd gone through, you were doing all this evangelizing, for lack of a better term, and then kind of what happened from there?
So what happened from there, one of the next things I was asked to do was to speak at the Congressional Black Caucus.
Okay.
This was in 2012. So I was very excited, actually, to have an opportunity to speak to this wonderful group of legislators so they could hear the story and take it back and hopefully help me and people like me so that we wouldn't have to deal with this again. Sure. I told my story. And during that time, I said, look, this is day 60. So I had actually just left a job. It was a sales job, actually. And we won't even get into that, but I'm a good salesperson, but that particular opportunity was not a great one for me. So I ended up leaving. I was on day 60 and I had to make that decision, COBRA or not.
Okay.
And COBRA was $660 something a month. And at the time I did not have additional income. Okay. So I didn't know what I was going to do. And I told them, look, this is day 60 and I don't know yet what I'm going to do. I can either do COBRA and start paying for it or figure out how to live for the next 6 months, because I'd heard about this Affordable Care Act. There was something called PPACA. It was the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act. So something that happened just before the actual law became law.
Okay.
And I said, well, I could try something like that. But in order to qualify, you had to go without insurance for 6 months. And you had to have documentation from an insurance company of denial. So, you know, they needed to know that you had been denied and you were going for 6 months. And I said, well, what kind of legislators are going to ask people like me to go without insurance for 6 months, knowing that no one wants to touch me?
And that's risk.
Oh,
right?
My God.
So if anything, you need to have contiguous coverage. You don't need to have coverage drops. And if you're in a situation like you described where you were not working, then it's hard to come out of pocket in order to pay for that.
It was extremely hard. I mean, honestly, I sat there thinking about how long am I going to be able to come up with $600 a month and my rent and everything else until such a time as either I find a job or whatever the case may be. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and start this process because I know at some point I am not going to continue to be able to pay $600 a month. So why delay that? Let me go ahead and start and just pray God cover me for the next 6 months. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I waited for the next 6 months. I did qualify. So come January is when I was able to actually apply for this insurance policy.
Gotcha.
Well, not a policy, I guess the plan. So I did apply and I didn't even think about it for the next 2 or 3 weeks. I was in the process of moving and I was doing a lot of other stuff. A lot of things were on my mind. And then something said, you know what, Aqua, why don't you go back and just give them a call and make sure they have your application, because I feel like you should have heard something by now. So I called them and this was maybe the Thursday or Friday before Valentine's Day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I said, yeah, I'm calling to check on the status of my application. And so the lady on the other end, let's call her Angel, because that's what she was to me. She said, okay, you know, tell me your name and, you know, when did you send it? And, you know, I don't see anything here from you. Well, tell me your story. And so I told her and she says, oh, honey, this is what this was made for. Like, exactly. You need to be on this. And she said, but I don't see an application from you. So I don't know why my application did not get there. But for some reason, there was nothing in the system. And she said, I need you to overnight your application and also like fax. And she gave me a fax number and she says, but I'm going to need like your original, you know, documentation. Mm-hmm, She said, do all this and do it immediately. She said, I can't tell you why, but I need you to do it immediately. So I did. And come to find out right after Valentine's Day, they, an announcement was made on the news that said that the PPACA plan had reached its limit. And the demand was so high that they had to stop accepting applications. She got me in a nick of time.
So she kind of slid you in at the 11th hour before the whole thing closed out.
She absolutely did. And there was a blessing. So I'm going to tell you why in just a minute.
So just explain to the audience what the program was that you got enrolled in. Obviously, you didn't know until the announcement came, but what was it designed to do?
This program was designed to help people who had been, I already told you the two qualifications, denied health insurance and did not have health insurance, right, at all. So I had to have the denial and I had to have been without health insurance for some period of time. I'm guessing, I'm not sure exactly how they came up with the 6 months, but maybe you had to be well enough to be viable. I don't know. But for some reason, I had to I had to somehow survive for 6 months without insurance. And that's what it was for. It did not matter what my pre-existing conditions were. This was kind of a first of its kind opportunity where I was not going to be judged for things that actually had nothing to do with me. My challenges had nothing to do with how I live my life, what I ate, what I didn't do anything. These were all hereditary things.
Right.
And they just happened to impact me at a much earlier age than most people.
Gotcha.
So that's what happened. Well, I will tell you this. The next, I got my insurance card. Once all that happened, I got my insurance card 2 months later in April. And the very next month, I had my first heart attack.
Wow.
So when I talk about things being ordered by God, my God, it is just so powerful when I think about that angel she heard my story. I don't think I'd even tell her the whole, you know, all the challenges that I'd been through the years before. I just told her about my stroke and the open heart surgery and insurance companies refusing to even touch me. And it's not for anything that I ever did. And just for that to happen and for her to get me in and for me to get my insurance card, which was a lifesaver. And the very next month, I have a heart attack. I mean, I had no idea a heart attack was coming. I've been fine for the most part. I've been fine. I'll just say that it was a life changer. It was a lifesaver. And I can't thank the Affordable Care Act team, President Obama, Secretary Sebelius, everybody who was involved in that process. I can't thank them enough for getting that done and saving my life.
Well, you know, and you said a couple of things there that I just want to tease out a little bit. Obviously, everything is divinely ordered, as we've talked about so many times. But the idea that you are in this situation through no fault of your own. And I actually used to bring this up a lot when I was talking to people who are articulating their opposition, at least at that point in time. Now, we know that some of the contemporary language, even in the tail ends of the opposition to the Affordable Care Act, folks started talking the language about covering pre-existing conditions. But in early, call it what, 2009 or 2009, 2010, that was not necessarily the case, right? The opposition was fairly consistent. But just understanding that there were these folks who either had been subject to financial ruin already or could have potentially been subject to financial ruin through no fault of their own, that it was definitely a gap that existed at that particular point in time. So, hey, what we're going to do right now is we are going to take a break for a few minutes and we're going to go off and pay a few bills. And then we will see you guys back on the other side. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. As we ended the last segment, we were continuing our conversation here with Opal and her health care journey that she's gone through throughout the course of her life. And I believe that we talked about you receiving your healthcare card, what we'll refer to as in the nick of time. And then you had your heart attack, and right. You kind of went through your recovery.
I did.
After the heart attack. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how you ended up meeting Representative Cummins.
Yeah, absolutely. So after the heart attack, the doctor said that it would be, you know, there'd be about a 6-month recovery period to see, you know, how well I could recover, really, in what my EF would be.
Okay.
EF is ejection fraction. It's a measure of how efficient your heart operates. And I'd lost most of mine. I did cardiac rehab and all this. And just as soon as 6 month hit, there was an opportunity to tell my story again through the American Heart Association. And this was with Congressman Cummins. So I went down to the Hill and met with him, and we were on a show called The Ed Show. It's no longer around, but if you did a search on Ed Show, Aqualyn Cummins, you'll probably see the video.
Okay.
But they asked about my story, and I will tell you, meeting Representative Cummins was so fun. I mean, his energy was just amazing, and he had this wonderful way of making you feel comfortable that you were about to be on air and share your story and really engage you. So you'll see in the video where I kind of get deep into one of my stories, and Ed stops me, and then Congressman Cummins is able to kind of bring it back home. So it was pretty powerful. I was really excited to have a chance to do that.
All right. So you were on this television show. You had some interaction with the representative. What was it that you were including in your statement that was submitted? What were you trying to basically communicate in terms of that part of your story?
Are you talking about the statement to the House committee or?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So when I had a chance to actually a separate time, I went back to the Hill to speak to the House and Oversight Committee with Representative Issa. And it was very important that this group and really all of Congress understood some really key issues around basically the no fault of my own of losing health insurance.
Right.
The fact that when I tried to get it again and again, I got what I thought was insurance, but turned out not to be, because if a company can refund you your payments and say that they're not responsible, it's not really insurance. And one thing that I learned at that point is, you know, that, that whole space, that it's, you're buying trust. You're not really, you're not buying insurance. You're buying, you trust that someone's going to do what they say they're going to do. So, I also wanted them to know that, being able to use any part, so any part of my background, any part of my pre-existing condition to invalidate coverage of another part of me that has nothing to do with it,
right,
was insane.
That's the whole hip bones connected.
That's exactly what it was. Right. It had nothing to do. My situation had been my heart, and this was a gastrointestinal. It had nothing to do with it. But they connected them and said that these are connected and we are not going to cover you. So, I mean, there were just so many ways that there were no remedies, and there was really nowhere to go other than I was kept going back to the same people who denied me, asking them to reconsider. And, you know, at what point are they going to reconsider? They're talking to a person who's just ill or, you know, just recovering, but has no capacity to truly fight. One of the things I wish I'd done thinking back on it was reached out to my legislators right then. I didn't. I took the fight on my own.
Right.
And I reached out to the hospital because those are the people who are closest to me, the hospital, the insurance company, when it came to this.
Right.
But it's a lesson learned that, you know, our public servants are public servants for a reason. And I do believe that if I'd reached out, I could have gotten some help. And so, you know, that's just an opportunity that I've learned that I share back with each of you listening, is make sure that you're leveraging, you know, the people who are here to represent you and support you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that part. So now just to level set. So we're in 2013. The Affordable Care Act had been passed. There was an implementation target of the 1st of October. But what I wanted to do is just to remind everybody what the world looked like before and what the world looks like now that we have the Affordable Care Act. So the first thing was, the Affordable Care Act prevented companies from dropping you as a result of reaching a lifetime limit.
Right.
That was one of the things I know that I've heard some of my friends talk about. The other thing is that you could not be denied coverage for having a pre-existing condition.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, when you go through the proverbial list of things that are defined as pre-existing conditions, you know, that list is very, very long. One of the other things I recall was that now children could remain on their parents' health insurance policy up to the age of 26.
26.
So yeah, that's actually very interesting. I know we joke about this all the time that regardless of where people tend to fall on the political spectrum, you know, we've never really heard any blowback from people saying that they should not be able to cover children to age of 26. So I think that was probably a good thing. A number of other things, I think it started to kind of create some level set in terms of how men are charged versus how women are charged. It kind of brought that a little bit back into balance.
Right.
So it now becomes the law of the land. Okay. So that was 9 years ago. So let's just kind of flash forward to the present time. One of the things that I do remember was the potential for some dollars to go into a Medicaid expansion.
Right.
And that states had the option to either participate or not participate. And we know that the Alabama is one of, I think, about 16 or so states that chose not to participate. So that kind of sets up the lay of the land. That's where we are right now. So can you kind of bring it to the present day, talk about, you know, some of the work that you've been doing and kind of what ended up happening during the last legislative session and then kind of how the stage is set going forward from there?
Sure. Yeah. So there has definitely been so much progress made since that time. I mean, this was, you know, starting back in, 2007 was when I had the first situation, which was the dropping of, you know, when they dropped me from the health insurance. So it literally took the whole 7 years, you know, from 2006 or so to 2013. That's when I had the opportunity to actually sit in the Roosevelt room in the White House prior to meeting President Obama. There were 13 of us who had all gone through similar horrific stories, fates.
Yeah.
And we'd all shared these stories with President Obama and Secretary Sebelius in the Oval Office. And then we stood behind him in the Rose Garden as he did the ceremonial opening of the healthcare exchanges. That was on October 1st, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was probably one of the most amazing, exciting, rewarding full circle moments of my life, because it literally had been the full 7 years of struggle. And but thereafter, so bringing it home. So we finally have affordable healthcare. Well, somewhat affordable healthcare for most of us, but mm-hmm. we finally have the act. And we have the opportunity for states to engage, and a number, most did, and over time, a few more did. Now, there are, at this point, there are about 13 that have still not moved forward with Medicaid expansion.
Thanks for correcting that.
No, that's fine. And Alabama's one of them. So one of the things that I don't know if the audience knows or not, but we've worked with an organization of an umbrella organization that actually has brought a number of organizations together. So my work, I always talk about the American Heart Association.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who have advocated for so many things that have actually ended up saving my life. And I am very much a very strong supporter. And one place, so I said, talk to your congresspeople. Also, talk to organizations like that, research organizations, health organizations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because they are most interested in your story and in helping to get that resolved. I mean, that's their mission. So that's another place that you want to go. They're looking for help. So please, please do reach out to them. But just to come back to this, I was working with them throughout all this. And when I got to Alabama, I realized that they also were working with a number of health organizations with regards to getting people covered and making sure that people have the health care they need.
Okay.
And one thing that we all agree on in terms of these organizations is Medicaid expansion is the surest way to get the most people covered in the quickest amount of time.
Okay.
And for the least cost, you know, the most inexpensively. And I think that this is something that our legislators would certainly appreciate, to not have to spend so much of the money in our coffers here on healthcare. So there's a great opportunity for us to do that. One thing that we were able to do, we kind of started to focus in more narrowly on one segment of the Alabama population, and that was moms.
Gotcha.
So that's been going on for many, many years. You all probably remember a number of requests for, you know, some postpartum coverage, extending postpartum coverage for longer, doing something to help moms. And it was not until this April that we finally had, we found success. All the organizations, which all kind of work under an organization called Cover Alabama, it's an extension of Alabama Arise, but all of the healthcare organizations that have come together to work on this, we were able to push this over the finish line and help mothers get their postpartum coverage extended from 60 days to a full year, 365 days.
Okay.
What does that mean? That means if you think about the number of moms who deliver here in Alabama, there are at least 30,000 births a year that are covered by Medicaid. Mm. 30,000 babies come into this world covered and financed by Medicaid. And thank God. Thank God that they are financed that way. But the sad thing was, after 2 months, their mothers were losing coverage. And so if anything happened to their mothers, what do you think happened to those babies?
So the babies were covered, but the mothers weren't.
That's right. Babies are covered, but mothers aren't. What if the mother's not well enough to get the baby to the doctor? I mean, there are any number of things. But one of the things that this coalition of organizations did is they really started to deep dive into what are the impacts to the mom. And during these subsequent months after she's given birth, yet she's no longer covered, they found mental health has ended up being a part. Like postpartum is very much, it's very, you know, people understand and they've heard about postpartum. They don't necessarily know what it means, but the impact to the family, to the baby, to the mother can be devastating. And that tends to creep up, if it's going to happen, sometime between month 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9. But whatever it is, it's beyond the time that they were originally covered. And so gotcha. This is one of the reasons, that and a whole host of reasons, that these organizations were hoping and pushing to get that coverage extended. Luckily, the legislators on both sides of the aisle love mothers too. And they were able to find a way to make this happen. So this is kind of where we started in terms of getting our the postpartum coverage out there and through the...
And that's one thing that's very positive. You know, we have a lot of issues that cause us to go into our traditional corners on the left and the right. But to see this be something that could be unifying in the legislature, in the Alabama state legislature, and to actually get through both chambers and signed by the governors is actually another excellent example of folks coming together to address a problem and make things a little bit better.
Right. It really is. And so, but let me just tell you that it's not a done deal. While we were able to get this done for year one, it requires a state plan amendment for it to actually happen. And okay. This amendment can be extended for up to 5 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So nothing is done, like in terms of the period is not done. We are still in this process. We are still working to make sure that this is not a short-term solution for moms. We need to make sure that moms are covered. And hopefully they'll be covered for longer than that. Mm-hmm. But what we definitely want to ensure is every baby for the next 5 years has a mom that will be covered for at least a year.
Well, I just want to clarify so there's no confusion with the audience. So what got through the legislature during the last regular legislative session was the extension from 60 days to 12 months or
correct.
1 year. Is that correct?
That's
okay,
right.
So that's what's in as of right now.
Mm-hmm.
What you're describing right now is a provision or an option, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term,
right.
that would allow that 1 year to be extended to as long as 5 years.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
Correct.
Right. Just wanted to make sure I was understanding that correctly.
Absolutely. And that's that with the help of this organization, all the organizations that are part of it, working in concert with Commissioner Azar, and just really working together with our legislators to find out what is it that we need to do to make sure that we put in place the right tools and the right means of the community accessing the healthcare that they need, and making sure that we have the metrics to show that it's working. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Okay. All right. Did you have any thoughts, or have y'all had any conversations so far about the potential to expand Medicaid in the state, or is it too early for that at this point?
Well, the same organization is very interested in the healthcare for all Alabamians. What we will say is that 50%, I don't know if I mentioned that before, but when I said that the 30,000 number, 50% of the babies in Alabama were financed by Medicaid. So we have to think about, you know, everyone you know, half the people that you know from Alabama may be here because of that very helpful and useful piece of legislation. And,
I got you.
And so thank God that it's here. We are certainly working with the group to find out how this can happen, and we're very hopeful that we'll find a solution. I think that we're getting closer and closer as more and more legislators are understanding the need,
mm-hmm.
And with times changing and between the economy and things of that nature as well, there's no better time as well, because there's a lot of incentive for the state to move forward and find a way to expand Medicaid at a reduced cost,
mm-hmm.
because of the different benefits and incentives that have been given.
I got you. And I know you guys haven't been focused on this one specifically on your legislative agenda. I know it's one of the overall objectives, but one of the things that folks spend a lot of time talking about is the impact to rural hospitals. So we know that since the time the Affordable Care Act has gone into place, that a number of hospitals in our rural community have closed.
Yes.
And the theory is similar to other theories associated with government matched dollars, is that if you have a little bit of investment from the state of Alabama, a larger investment from the overall federal government, that the flow of those dollars may actually be enough to help sustain some of those hospitals within our rural communities. Have you guys had any conversations about that yet within your your four walls, or is that a little bit further down the proverbial tracks, if you will?
Now, my understanding, I've been close to these conversations for a short time in the whole scheme of things.
Sure.
And these conversations have been going on for years and years. So I cannot comment on how far back these conversations have gone, but I'm almost positive that they have been going on for many, many years, if not a decade or more. So I do know that that is a critical concern. One thing that, you know, this is not political. One thing that we say at the American Heart Association is, you know, a heart is a heart. There's a red heart, a green heart, a blue heart. We love all hearts.
We love all hearts.
We love all hearts. And I think every organization, Lung Association, medical, everyone, we love everyone. We want health. That's what we want. We want healthy people, healthy families. And what is it going to take to get there? So I think that's one thing that we can agree on. And I think it's one thing that kind of brings us together, like in times of crisis, whenever there's something that happens, no one's worried about left or right or whatever. You people jump in to help. That's what happens. That's what we look at on the news every day. We see heroes every day.
Yep.
We have heroes right here. We have heroes in our State Department. We have heroes right there in the governor's office getting things done. So it's not a political thing. Does this help us get healthier? Does this elevate us? Does this bring us together in a better way? And that's what we're looking for.
All right. Well, that will end up being the last substantive word on this particular segment. So, Aquilin, if folks want to learn more about your story, how can they get in contact with you?
Well, they can look online.
You can maybe contact you at Kennedy for Alabama.
Well, that's one way you can do it as well. You can click online at Kennedy for Alabama. That might be the easiest way.
There you go. There you go. Well, hey, thank you so much for sharing your story. We really do appreciate that. And to all the folks who are actually listening to the broadcast right now, this is what we do here at Kennedy for Alabama. You know, sometimes we're talking about the hardcore political stuff, and other times we're talking about stuff that impacts every aspect of our community. So thank you guys so much for continuing to tune in and offer us your support. So with that, we're going to end tonight's broadcast. You guys be good and stay safe, and we'll look forward to talking to you sometime soon. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.